The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
And thank you for joining us for another edition of HR Today, the first touch of winter we're seeing this week. I am fortunate enough to be joined by Kara Hans, who is the HR business partner at Turn 5. Turn 5 is one of the largest and fastest growing e-commerce retailers in the Delaware Valley, engaging car enthusiasts with the trendiest aftermarket parts in the market. At Turn 5, Kara is primarily focusing on employee relations, strategy, leader development, talent acquisition and benefits, but is responsible for all the HR functions within the group. Tara's studying at Villanova to prepare for her Sherman as her bachelor's from Westchester. Go Golden Rams. Thank you for joining us today, Kara.
Thank you for having me.
So first, before we get into some questions and talking about preparing for green managers and coaching, tell us about Turn 5. What are they? I hear them all the time. Everyone loves working there. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we are, I mean, you kind of covered it in the beginning, but we're an e-commerce aftermarket retailer. We are most well-known for our flagship brand, AmericanMuscle.com, which we sell aftermarket performance parts for Mustangs. And then we also have Extreme Terrain and American Trucks, which is more Jeep and truck related. But at our heart, we are a tech company. We have an awesome e-commerce department that builds our website and does all of that. So we are a tech company, but we are in a niche market and sell to car enthusiasts.
Okay. And I'm a Jeep owner, so I know it's the most aftermarket outfitted car in
yes,
the world.
Yes, it is.
So coaching conversations. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about green managers. Why is this important to an organization? And tell me what it is.
Yeah, so as we've seen, the workforce is becoming extremely millennial dominated right now. So they say like in the next, year or two, it's going to be over 50% millennial dominated. So what that means is that this millennial generation, there's lots of opinions obviously on the millennial generation, but the employees are less loyal to an organization and in my opinion, more so loyal to an organization that offers them more opportunity. So they're an ambitious group and they want more, but they want more sooner. So you'll start to see these younger, less experienced employees in junior management roles. And so it poses a risk, right? So you start to see these younger, less experienced managers. And so there's less of a been there, done that, more learn as you go, trial by fire. And it's an opportunity for managers and HR to train good habits earlier in these green employees.
So when you have these green employees and they don't know what they're doing, they might be fumbling around to no fault of their own. When does HR step in and try to help, consult, and guide them?
Yeah, so I would say that some people would say, where does HR stop? When does manager come in? Where does manager stop? HR come in? I'm a firm believer that if HR has the relationship and buy-in of a consultative partner, they can be consultative during the entire process. So HR can be neutral, obviously, like they are in any situation, protecting the business, but making sure that any messaging to an employee comes across to that employee in a way that makes sense to them. So it's HR's responsibility and the manager's responsibility to make sure you're looking at what's the intent versus the possible impact to that employee. So are you getting across what you mean to, or are you saying it in a way that is just not going to work for that person? So are you considering that employee's personality type? It's the basics, right? So you're going over performance and numbers. Let's say you're in a KPI metric driven environment. So you're going over numbers. But are you doing anything but reciting numbers or feedback? Are you getting to a root cause? How's your body language? So employees pay attention. They care if they think you're invested in paying attention. Are you taking notes? Do they know you're listening to them, or do they feel like they're getting barked at? So all of these things are super important. But I think number one to coach these green managers on is making sure they are following up with their employees, which is, I think, something that we lack in the workforce nowadays. You know, you have a meeting with someone, you leave, and there's no follow-up based on that. And then, you know, you have this employee who now thinks you're not really invested in whatever you guys just talked about. So I think, you know, following up, consistency is number one. And when you're coaching these green managers on that, it's important to emulate that. You know, you go back to them and you say, hey, I know we had this, you know, hour-long coaching session about how you're going to go about this conversation with X employee. How did that go? Is there anything else I can help you with? What happened? Tell me about it. And really show that you're invested. And if they have a good experience with that, they're more apt to do that with that employee then.
So where are you seeing these green managers, these green supervisors? Is there an environment where you see them becoming more prevalent?
Yeah. So I think that it could really be in any environment, but in my opinion, I've seen them more often in more of a production environment or high turnover, could be high turnover, customer-centric or customer-oriented role. Typically, these people are high performers turned boss, so more of a rose through the ranks concept. And the concept can get a lot of flack. I know there's a lot of people that feel that, you know, obviously your high performers don't always make the best leaders. They're not always going to be the best manager, but it can work when they have the right training, support, mentorship. Even though it does get a lot of flack, it can work, but you just need to recognize and train.
What's the old adage, when you take your best producer, make him a manager, you now have a bad producer and a bad manager.
Exactly.
So it can be tough.
Yep.
And a lot of these green managers, are they able to adapt and identify with the younger employees? Because I assume they're younger themselves. Do you see that as an issue, or just more inexperience as a manager?
Yeah, so I think, I think, yes, they can relate, but at the same time, it can be tough, right? Because this person was probably once that person's peer.
Sure.
So now they are not just learning how to become a manager and a leader, but they're also trying to, at the same time, build their reputation as a manager and, also relate to that person, but they might have even been friends with that person. So you're trying to differentiate that relationship as peers, and also now gain the respect as someone's manager and someone's leader. So, you know, yes, you can relate better, but is that easier when this person you used to sit next to?
So what happens? You have a conversation, it blew up, it's not going well, it's too late. What do you do then to either remedy the situation, rectify it, or just say, you're done?
Yeah. So I think this happens a lot, actually, because I don't know if always it's predictable when just a normal conversation, what you intended to be normal will become something much bigger, right? So, I don't think that it's ever too late. And, you know, once, you know, I've had employees come to me, be like, Kara, listen, I don't know what happened, but I was just going over X, Y, and Z with this person, and it went so bad. They're so angry. I think they might leave, like, you know, that bad. And I think the best advice you can give to someone in that situation is just say, take some ownership of how you let that conversation go. You know, you can say, hey, I'm sorry, I don't think our last meeting was as productive as I intended it to be, after I was able to reflect on our conversation. You know, I think that with at any age, honesty goes a long way, and it's all in how you frame it. So if you go to that person, you're like, hey, can we try this again? Sorry that our last meeting didn't go how we both intended it to. I'd like, you know, to give it another shot. I think that a lot of times that will go further than you really think it could.
But there, at that point, there's the wounds are there. So you have to be careful and tread lightly, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you're now rebuilding. So, you know, you want to take that ownership. You want to say, hey, I'm gonna take some ownership as a leader. I'm gonna take some ownership over this situation. I let it escalate. I didn't de-escalate it while I saw it happening. Might have been, you know, their first time with that happening, but yeah, there's a little bit of severed relationship there. But I think the sooner you go back and you say, "Hey, again, I'm sorry. That's not how I intended our last meeting to go. I'd really like the opportunity to try that again after I was able to take some time and reflect."
So besides failures, there's always successes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about a success story, how you saw it evolve and what happened?
Yeah, so I actually think there's lots of examples to give. I think the most important piece to remember, though, is to be as proactive as possible for this stuff, right? So when you can or if you're able to invest in these green junior leaders in training them and preparing them for these conversations in advance. But obviously, like with anything else, literally anything else in HR, it is, often hard to be proactive and not reactive. So these success stories are mostly based on being reactive. So you approach the conversation thoughtfully. One of the most important things to remember is that if a manager, one of these green managers, thinks they're being singled out, so you're being reactive, something blew up, you're having a conversation with them after. Hey, let's analyze this. What went wrong? How can we make sure this doesn't happen again? If they think they're being singled out because you don't believe in them, or you know everyone else can do it but they can't, they're struggling in this area, it can be crushing to their confidence. It's hard to remember sometimes that your high performing managers are new leaders, and it's scary for them. Like I said before, they're building a new reputation many a times with former peers, and it's important to not let that be an oversight. The conversations that you're having with them and instilling that confidence will be critical. So that's really, you know, without giving a very specific examples maybe outing someone, I think those are the most important pieces that are critical to having success with changing behavior and preparing someone to be a great leader.
Karen, one sentence. Tell everyone why you love human resources.
I love human resources because you have a chance to, you know, have a piece in every part of the business and make real impact if you have the buy-in from your organization and your peers.
I want to thank Kara Hans, a Turn 5 Human Resource Business Partner, and we'll be back right after these words.
Will this be the year that your company makes its move? What about the one or two people in your organization who are still question marks? Maybe their way of thinking is not progressive. Have their computer and accounting skills faded? Are they still doing things the way they've always done them? That's a bad fit if they're making key decisions for your company. Letting go a key employee is never easy. The Dubin Group can help. They conduct confidential replacement hiring for clients that need to make an immediate change and replace a current key employee with a top talent that will keep your company growing. From the recruitment and screening of candidates to conducting off-site interviews and every step to the final offer. Call Ken Dubin right now. The Dubin Group, matching the right people with the right companies for over 15 years in the Delaware Valley. Confidentially replacing an employee is never easy. Let the Dubin Group help. Call right now.
When it comes to employee benefits, the name to know is Sharon Planning, the premier employee benefit consulting firm in the Delaware Valley. Sharon Planning is headquartered right here and has been serving companies in the Delaware Valley for over 15 years. Sharon Planning focuses on middle market firms with as few as 100 employees and as many as 5,000 employees. However, they also serve clients with 3,000 to 30,000 employees. They specialize in planning, designing, implementing, and managing an effective employee benefit package for your team from start to finish. Sharon Planning will save your company money while maximizing your employees' benefits and make their lives easier. Get the Sharon Planning team with over 65 employees, 160 clients, and $500 million in managed premium on your side. Contact Rich Krechstein, Director of Business Development, right now at rkrechstein@sharon.nfp.com. That's rkrechstein, K-R-E-K-S-T-E-E-N, at sharon.nfp.com. Sharon Planning can make a difference for your company.
And thank you for joining us for the second half of HR Today, as always, sponsored by NFP for your benefit consulting needs and the Dubin Group for your accounting, administrative, and HR needs. Our second half, we're joined with and by Karen Carr, PHR, SHRM member, senior colleague relations partner at Mercy Catholic Medical Center at the Mercy Philadelphia campus. And where is that?
It's in West Philadelphia, 54th and Cedar.
Beautiful. Where I want my kids playing at night.
So
Karen is a senior colleague relations partner for Mercy Catholic, formerly Mercy Philadelphia Hospital. She's been with Mercy for 11 years, and her title was human resource consultant until she recently accepted a new role. She provides guidance and colleague relations, subject matter expertise to leadership, managers, and colleagues in promoting and fostering a fair, positive, and collaborative working environment. In addition, Karen contributes to the development, implementation, and management of colleague relations strategies, philosophies, processes, and programs. She's an ambassador, part of the membership committee for Greater Valley HR Association, which is a local SHRM affiliate, and also the former president of the Greater Valley Human Resource Association. Prior to her current employment, Karen worked at Cardinal Health Pharmaceutical Division in Swedesboro as an HR generalist. She is PHR and SHRM certified and graduated from my alma mater, Penn State, in labor and employees relations. It's a mouthful. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Penn State grad, we are horrible Saturday. I don't even want to talk about it. I get so annoyed. I was talking to my dad on one phone, my kids in the other, and the F4 was flying out of every side of the mouth after that game.
I got the "we are losers" text a couple times. So I'm like, really?
Yeah, I love all my friends are joining the bandwagon. One of them, two of them go to Syracuse. Syracuse couldn't beat Lowell Murray in football team right now, and they're sitting there complaining how Penn State let us down. So I just look at it this way. I saved $2,000 on taking my kids up there to watch a football game, because now we'll switch it to either a hockey or a basketball
game. There you go.
So let's talk about building a fair and just culture. What is just culture?
So it's developed by an organization called Outcome Ingenuity, who created the Just Culture training and tools. Outcome Ingenuity provides a training and certification for this Just Culture methodology. So what it is really it's a philosophy and decision-making tool that uses a fair process to review our systems and human behaviors in alignment with our mission and core values. So what it's all about is conducting fair and thorough investigations that focus on behaviors, choices, and system improvement opportunities, and not outcomes. It's seeking input from colleagues to identify risks in the organization, as well as help design safer systems, which is important in healthcare and hospitals. And as appropriate, hey, sometimes you have to hold colleagues accountable for their behavior and choices and consistent with any policies you might have. It changes our way of thinking about safety for patients and colleagues. It allows us to learn from undesirable outcomes. It recognizes the opportunities to reduce the risk that might have happened. It supports continuous learning in the environment, and it reminds us to help find and fix defects in our work environment as well.
So this is for any level, anyone within the organization?
Absolutely.
Can you walk us through the steps of the process, how it is implemented, what you're doing, and how it plays out?
Absolutely. So pretty much there's three steps in a just culture process. So first one, of course, when something happens, you do an event investigation. So you're asking, you know, the normal questions: what happened, what normally happens, what does the procedure require, why did it happen, or why did it happen this time, and how are we managing the risk in the first place? So part of the things you're looking at is, when you're asking these questions, is system decisions and human behaviors. So you're listing at the system factors. What are the policies and procedures that were involved, regulations and standards that might have been violated or not followed? What equipment was used, learning programs, the environment, what else contributed? Human factors, behavior choices, human errors, biases, perception of risk. So all these things you look at when asking these questions, talking to witnesses, running reports if you need to, looking at what training and education was given, and trying to find out how this actually might have happened. So that's the first step, is doing the actual event investigation.
Right.
The second piece is a causal diagram, where you're actually starting on the right-hand side with what happened and working backwards to the left, asking the whys. Why, until you get back to why this actually happened. The third part, which is kind of the most fun part of the investigation, is putting it through the just culture algorithm. And there's three different paths that are part of this algorithm. And this piece is done with a just culture champion. And the just culture champions are those that have been trained in just culture, so they understand this process. So the first path is duty to avoid causing an unjustifiable risk or harm. So if you think that is what happened, you're going to ask questions such as, was the colleague's purpose to cause the harm? Did the colleague knowingly cause the harm? And kind of walk through these questions and get yes or no answers. A second path can be duty to follow a procedural rule or standard if there's an actual checklist or something that the colleague must be following in order to complete a task. Was it possible to follow the rule? Was it possible to... for them to understand the rule. Did they know the rule? And again, yes or no answers to each of those questions. And the last one is duty to produce an outcome. And this is whatever the outcome was, did they produce it? And was it made known to the colleague? Was it possible to produce the outcome? So these yes and no questions eventually get you to the outcomes. And some of the eventually outcomes can be do not consider disciplinary action, support the colleague in decisions, hey, accept the outcome for what it is. If it's human error, it's consoling the colleague. If it's at-risk behavior, you might be coaching them. And if it's reckless behavior, hey, you're going to consider disciplinary action.
And this can be used for any situation, anywhere. It can permeate through the system in any way?
Absolutely. So, for example, we can use it for, let's say, lateness. So the outcome would be to get here on time. So then you follow back to see why was the colleague late. So if someone's late, you might automatically assume, you know what, it's a counseling, it's an incident. But let's say they were late, especially in our hospital setting. Let's say they're late because they were helping a patient to go to their appointment. They're late for a good reason. So they had a justifiable reason of why they were late.
What happens? So that's an easy example.
Yeah.
It's great. But what happens if the knucklehead's late every day and they, it's the SEPTA bus, it's... Mm-hmm. The dog ate my alarm clock, and now every time he burps, I hear an alarm. You know, it could be, there was traffic on the Schuylkill. Mm-hmm. Well, I always said, there's traffic on the Schuylkill every day.
Right.
So how about you plan on leaving, and the day that there's no traffic, you actually get here early.
Right.
New concept.
Right. So, but our justifiable reasons are based on the benefit of the hospital. So by walking that patient, you are benefiting the hospital.
Agree 100%.
Yes.
That's a legitimate excused tardiness.
Yes.
What happens, though, when they're not excused and the actions are continual every single day? They're late. They're a good employee, but they show up, if they're supposed to be here hypothetically at 8:30, it's 8:35, it's 8:40. What do you do then?
We're following our lateness policy. So typically our lateness policy is it's a no-fault policy, which means it does not matter the reason. But if it is benefiting the hospital, like I'm walking a patient to their appointment, then that's an excused.
And then it's just a demerit, right?
Actually, it would not be because that one was excused.
No, not that one, but the
other ones absolutely would be. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So how has it impacted the hospital and what kind of results have you seen?
Yeah. So it actually it eliminates biases. We're not jumping to conclusions anymore. It's funny when my managers call, I'm always starting with, what did the colleagues say? Get their story first, find out what they said. We're hearing all sides, we're speaking to witnesses, so it makes everyone feel involved in the process and that we're making good decisions together. We're relying on others for expert opinions, and it feels like we're doing a thorough investigation instead of just assuming, oh my gosh, you hear this scenario and you think, you know, that's an automatic termination, it's an automatic, you know, disciplinary action. So it's helped to not us jump to conclusions.
And this can be a minor situation or a major situation.
Absolutely.
Can work through.
Absolutely.
Interesting. This just culture, can it work for any organization whatsoever?
I believe so, because let's say you work in a warehouse. You have a process, or if you're picking products, that's one of those following a rule. So you have a procedure where there's a checklist. How do you pick products? How do you pick things? I think it can work anywhere. Dog grooming, what's the outcome? to have a dog that is, you know, cut, you know, has a good cut, is safe, and I think it can go kind of anywhere.
So I don't know. Have you looked at the results? Have you scaled them? Have you looked and say, all right, this is a KPI and these are the results? We have seen affirmative actions. We've seen this. We've seen that. What has it resulted in within the hospital that you've been able to either judge or mark against standards?
I just think because of all the investigations I've been in, it's just more of a, no, we're not going to terminate this person, or no, it's not as severe as we thought. I just think the whole culture has realized this isn't always what it seems.
Have they done any studies within the your organization to see is turnover down because of this?
Or they haven't.
They have not?
No, I can just tell you just from my own experience of what in the past a manager that would have come down and said, they get a counseling for this. No, they don't.
Right,
no, let's,
right.
Let's take a step back. Let's look at everything.
And there has been buy-in from management, the mid-level manager. Obviously, it came from the top. But have the mid-level managers accepted it, bought into it, and see the positive impact?
Absolutely, because it's conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, together we're coming up with what is the right thing to do.
Right.
And that's what's most important. And it feels good. And we all kind of get to the same conclusion. That's like, I feel like we have lots of conversations. Well, we could go this way, but I'm thinking this factor played into it. Or were they really trained? Or do you really think they understood when you said this? So it's a good conversation so everyone feels good about the decision.
Why don't you tell everyone why you love human resources?
Oh, my goodness. I love human resources. I love the relationships I build with my managers, with the colleagues that come in to see me. I like being able to help them feel good at the end of the day when they leave my office, whether they're, you know, if they're having a bad day, come on in. Let's talk about it. Let me get a little humor for you. You know, let me help you put a smile on your face before you leave. And just kind of that comforting, the people stuff. It's the people stuff.
And yeah. You can create a positive impact within
Absolutely.
The organization.
Absolutely.
And it makes you feel good.
It does. Every day. Every
day. That's great. Why don't you tell everyone how they can get in touch with you if they want to learn a bit about Just Culture, if they want to find out the nuances thereof, if there's a website, if there's an email address, so they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely. They can email me directly. I'm lucky that I have a pretty simple name. So it's K-Carr, C-A-R-R, at mercyhealth.org. My email. And I'm okay if people call on me as well, 215-748-9193.
I want to thank Karen Carr, who's a senior colleague relations partner at Mercy Catholic Medical Center at the Mercy Philadelphia campus. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone joining us. And as always, we are sponsored by NFP for your health benefits consulting needs and the Dubin Group for your temporary and direct hire, administrative HR, and accounting needs. We'll be back next week, and thank you so much.